Milwaukee Journal Sentinel Milwaukee Bucks podcast, joining you on a well, the middle of the week. It's a Wednesday. The Milwaukee Bucks, they've been done for quite some time. They've got an offseason ahead of them. We still don't know a lot about the schedule as it relates to things like the draft, the start of the free agency period, when we're going to find out about the salary cap. There's still a lot of unknowns, but I thought it might be an okay time still to talk about what's ahead, the challenges facing the Milwaukee Bucks as they look forward to hopefully continued success, continued upper echelon success in the Eastern Conference. My name is J.R. Radcliffe, host of the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel Bucks podcast, and on the other line is the one and only Matt Velasquez, covers the Bucks for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Read everything he has at jsonline.com. Matt, I know it's been kind of quiet, understandably. The Lakers are world champions. There's this always this dead period, but the Milwaukee Bucks still sort of remaining in the conversation, namely because of, you know, one of their best players being having a pretty big contract decision in front of them. So we'll start with Giannis. Giannis is kind of the centerpiece of all of this, and I know there isn't any news on in terms of whether he's going to sign the Supermax extension yet or not. I know that's a ways off here, but I guess right now, what are the things that you really need to know right now going into the offseason? Is it the date of when free agency starts? Is it the salary cap? Like, what is the piece of information we don't have right now, or pieces of information we really need to know before we can really kind of jump in and say what's next for the Milwaukee Bucks?
Well, I think we need to know, like, when it's going to be. Like, yes, it is the offseason. The season is over. They are off. It is the offseason. But when does the actual offseason start? When can teams start making transactions? When will free agency begin? When will next season even start? What will the salary cap be? I mean, you asked for one thing I need to know. There's a lot of things to know that we really just don't know. The only thing we think we know that isn't necessarily set in stone, but it is written down, is the draft is supposed to be November 18th. And usually free agency comes after the draft. And so the moratorium on transactions is after the draft. And so, you know, the draft is in the previous league year, so you can trade guys, you know, based on this, like, this past season's contracts and all that stuff. But will that be the case this year? Like, what will that all look like in the new world that we're in, where, there have been reports that I've seen that the NBA could lift its moratorium on transactions before the draft. So what does that mean for draft day trades? Like, what fiscal year are they on? Like, what are we dealing with? I don't think really anyone knows yet. That could change at any moment. Obviously, you know, figuring out when next season is going to start, how it's going to start, what it's going to look like. I'm guessing it won't be bubbled up again. I know that the NBA wants to get back into arenas and get back into home sites, and maybe do something similar like what baseball did or what the NFL is doing and things like that. But they're going to need time to plan that out. I know Adam Silver said he would give at least 8 weeks of time before they announce, like, when the season's going to start. So, like, we're looking like the season's not going to start until 2021. And the question is when in 2021 and how long the season's going to be. I mean, JR, you asked for one question. I gave you a million questions. There's so many questions. I can't limit it to one. We just don't know enough right now.
Yeah. And I mean, obviously you kind of need to know what that salary cap number is going to be before you start trying to plan how your roster is going to look. You know, we believe the number is going to go down. Certainly the NBA lost a lot of money by not being able to hold events, you know, in regular venues and its postseason in particular, but without that information, you don't know. So you can't really start, like, signing people anyway. You've really got to be cautious. And I don't know if the draft, the syntax of the draft or the free agency period, if that really matters. I think teams are kind of probably looking at it holistically in terms of how they're preparing. And the draft is probably a secondary avenue anyway, if you're in the top tier. But, you know, you got to have the order down before you can really decide how we're going to plan going forward. With Giannis in particular, it seems like, to me anyway, it seems almost like it has to be a situation where he doesn't sign the Supermax right away. There's too many unknowns. We just talked about them. Furthermore, the biggest unknown is if the Bucks are going to be a contender. Like, yeah, there's no way to know that right now. So I have to, I don't know if there's any scenario where we should expect Giannis to just, like, sign the Supermax in this offseason period whenever it begins.
No, I mean, I wouldn't expect that. I don't think many Bucks fans would or should expect that. Like, that he's just gonna be like, you know what, first day of the new transaction period, first day of free agency, I'm back, signing the Supermax, no reservations whatsoever. Like, no, he has leverage, and he has power with his you know, ability to keep the pen out of his hands. Like, if he's not signing anything, then that means the Bucks need to do other things to convince him to do so. They need to improve this team. The team didn't do well enough. They didn't reach their expectations. And sure, it was a pandemic season. There was the bubble. There were a lot of changes. But, like, you know, every team had to deal with that. And the Bucks didn't show up when it comes to the way they were expected to in the playoffs, especially. So, like, you need to obviously look in the mirror as a team and figure out, okay, what are the things that went wrong and how can we adjust going forward? And how can we, you know, bolster the talent around Giannis enough to convince him, one, that they can win now, and two, that they can win, you know, consistently into the future? Because right now, like, you know, I don't have that belief that they can win now. I mean, maybe some people do. Like, if they, you know, bring back the roster as currently constituted, I don't believe that's necessarily the best team in the NBA, the team that would win the championship next year. And so they don't have that now, so they need to get it now. But if you make moves to make that happen now that are just short-term, short-sighted moves, then maybe you don't have the team that you want to have for the future. That can, you know, win in years 3, 4, 5 of that Supermax contract. And that would create further issues down the road. So the big thing that Giannis said was everybody needs to be on the same page. Like, and if he believes everyone in the Bucks organization is on the same page for what is needed now and in the future, like, I think that's going to go a long way in him staying. And that's what he said after he was awarded his second MVP. So what page is Giannis on? What page, you know, is Mike Budenholzer on? What page is John Horst on? What page are the owners on? And they need to figure out how to get on that same page when it comes to building this roster, even though, you know, they have to contend with all of these unknowns, the issues that are kind of clouding the offseason. And Giannis doesn't have to sign the Supermax. There's no rule saying it's like Supermax or bust. He could sign a deal that's, you know, somewhat, you know, either equivalent or close to equivalent to the dollar amount of the Supermax, but for a shorter period of time. Like, he can do a 1 year deal. He can do a 1+1. He could do, I think it's like the 3 years that would get him to they would get him to 10 years of service. And then his next contract would be like the super duper max. So there are a lot of different things he can do. He doesn't have to do anything immediately. He can wait. He can kind of hold the Bucks' feet to the fire and say, you know, hey, I'll sign when I believe that we have the team we need to have now and for the future. But until then, you got to convince me. And that's his right to do so, whether he's, you know, actively saying those things or doing those things or not. Like, you know, he has the ability to do it.
We've talked about a little bit about this sort of off mic about how the Bucks, to have a path forward to be a really successful team, they probably need to take a really big swing. They last year really sort of concentrated on the fringes. Brought in some pieces for depth and, you know, guys like Wesley Matthews, Robin Lopez, George Hill the year before that, then re-signing him. I mean, those guys were valuable as depth pieces, but then we saw in the postseason where they really hurt was at the top of their lineup. They weren't able to match up. Their depth wasn't the thing that, you know, pushed them over the top. It wasn't really a necessary, you know, attribute to have when you weren't able to execute with your best players against a team with a really good defense like Miami. So I don't know what big swing looks like. Going back to that tension you were just discussing, short-term versus long-term, I think a guy like Chris Paul is a name that's come up a lot as a player that would be a good complement on this team if the Bucks decide they want to go in a different direction from Eric Bledsoe. We'll talk about Bledsoe in a little bit too, but, you know, you bring in a guy who's in the twilight of his career, yeah, he might be good for a year or two, but it's sort of going back, a throwback to the Oscar Robertson situation, but Chris Paul's even a little further along in his career. Like, that's not something that you could say in year 5 of that Supermax deal the Bucks will still be reaping the benefits from, because Chris Paul will either be 40 or out of the league, you know? So I don't know if that's what a big swing looks like, if it means a blockbuster trade that involves blowing up their roster and starting with basically just Giannis, because you start to list the assets they have to trade, there aren't many. You know, there's a draft pick in there, there's an expiring contract, there's, I don't know, Chris Middleton. Like, when we talk about the Bucks really going for it, really taking a big swing, what does that look like to you? What are some examples that would entail for this team?
You know, I've been firing up the trade machine today, but in anticipation of this podcast, I've been kind of thinking about different options. And in my mind, you know, if I'm the Bucks, like, you have to find the biggest swing you can that involves not getting rid of Giannis or Chris Middleton. Now, like, that is kind of like box one. Like, that is, if I'm putting these things into boxes, like, that's box one. Like, keep Giannis, keep Middleton. Everyone else is expendable. Like, Brooke Lopez has been incredible defensively, you know, offensively. I think he played pretty well in the bubble after not playing as well offensively or shooting as well offensively during the regular season. But he can be expendable. Eric Bledsoe, everyone who knows anything about the NBA knows that, you know, he's on the block. Like, we've had 3 years of Eric Bledsoe falling apart in the playoffs or underperforming in the playoffs, if you want to put it a little bit nicer. He's not a bad player. I don't think anyone would argue he's a bad player. I think, you know, his defense and his driving and his passing, you know, just his overall skills are valuable, but they're not valuable to the Bucks as much as other skills of other players may be. You know, you look at what the Rockets did, where they traded Clint Capella and they went all in on the small ball scheme. And yeah, it didn't necessarily work, but you see what happened when Russell Westbrook was the only non-shooter on the floor. And even him as a non-shooter, like, you know, he can shoot a little bit. You don't necessarily want him to if you're a Rockets fan, or, but, you know, he can. And then there's sometimes he can get hot. The problem for the Bucks the past few years has been that Bledsoe, you know, and Giannis are non-shooters. And so if you have this five-out system that involves three guys who can shoot threes and most of them not super well, that's a problem. I mean, Chris Middleton and Kyle Korver are like the only guys who shot like a scary percentage to opposing teams. Everybody else was like hovering around 35%. Like, that's not great. And especially when guys go cold, as we know has happened multiple times in the playoffs, like, then the Bucks just lose because they have no other outs, no other ways to do it. And so, you know, Eric Bledsoe, it's an open secret that he is on the block and he's someone that the Bucks will probably be looking to trade. So, like, but what can he fetch? Like, every team knows his worth. Every team wants to shoot better from three. So, like, what team wants him? You know, he has two more years fully guaranteed and then a third year that's only partially guaranteed. But, you know, what team is looking for that? What do the Bucks have to give up in order to get off of him while also bringing in someone who's of value to them? Like, that's a really tough needle to thread. So in terms of home runs, swings, I think Chris Paul, like, there is an argument to be made, right? Like, if years, you know, if the last couple of years of his contract aren't, you're not getting any value for them, like if he's over the hill or if he's just kind of done, but you won a championship in the first year, like, you know, how many people make that deal? Like, I feel like a lot of people do. I mean, if you're a Bucks fan, like, you want a championship, because a championship, you know, it is the surest way, I think, to get Giannis to stick around, because they have this 1 year. There's no reason to believe in a million years, we've talked about this in the podcast, that they will trade him during this year. I think they're going to play this one out and try to convince him to the bitter end that he should stay. And a championship, you know, I think just the euphoria of that and you know, getting to the mountaintop, I think that would be the surest thing. So, like, is that the value, you know? Or, you know, do you try and go for someone younger who can also, you know, shoot the ball a little bit better? You know, Jrue Holiday's been brought up a bunch. I, part of me just thinks that he's like a half measure. Like, he's better than Bledsoe, but he's very similar to Bledsoe. And he's not like, you know, some like knockdown 3-point shooter, but he's like a more respected shooter. So, like, does this team need just like an incremental upgrade over Eric Bledsoe? And is that enough to get them over the top? I don't know. I feel like I've been too, I don't know, I've been around Bucks Twitter too much for too many years. I'm starting to like really get on board with the idea of Bradley Beal. And I think that'd be a really big swing. And it might be really hard to get him without including Chris Middleton. But if there's a universe in which the Bucks could have Bradley Beal, Chris Middleton, and Giannis Antetokounmpo all on the same team, like, good luck stopping that offense. Like, I don't know how you do that. Even if you put Beal at point guard, like, he's not a point guard, he's a shooting guard. But, like, if you just played him as your, like, primary ball handler or, you know, offensive initiator. I mean, you could play him off ball too, because Giannis could be your primary ball handler. Chris Middleton could be your primary ball handler. It doesn't need to be, you know, somebody who looks like Eric Bledsoe, who's the same size, anything like that. So, like, if you have those three guys in the court, you can't come off Beal, who can create for himself, who can shoot threes when he's open, you know, who can get other guys open. You can't come off Middleton, who was like a 50-40-90 guy this year in the offense as constituted by the Bucks. And you can't come off Giannis because he's Giannis. So, you know, if you're playing him and then you surround them with, you know, say Wesley Matthews opts back in and Brooke Lopez is able to come back and they'll have to get rid of him in a trade to get someone like Beal. Like, I mean, this seems like a pipe dream, but like that's like the kind of team you'd make in like 2K. Well, if you were in 2K, you'd probably just get Damian Lillard instead of Bradley Beal and call it a day. But that's not happening. That's like, you know, that's just pure insanity. But you know, something like that, like I could see how that would work. And yes, you're giving up something on defense. Like Eric Bledsoe was an all defensive player. But you know, I think the Bucks can afford to give a little ground on defense if their offense is going to be like literally unstoppable. So, I mean, there's a whole bunch of guys. Like if you look around the league, there are maybe some cheaper options, and obviously cheaper options are going to come with lower ceilings. You might be able to find guys, you know, for minimum contracts or at the mid-level. If they can get like Joe Harris at the mid-level exception, like that's really good. He fits. You know, Robert Covington, he's not a free agent, but if they could trade for him, they desperately need some wing help. Where, you know, name any Bucks wing that's not Chris Middleton, and I don't think you'd be impressed by what they did in the playoffs. They just weren't that great, and a bunch of those guys are free agents. So, you know what? There are holes to plug. You know, there are definitely holes to plug. Most notably point guard, and I think at the wing. I think if the Bucks are able to keep, I mean, obviously they'll have Giannis, but if they're able to keep Brooke Lopez, you know, maybe they can fill out their backup kind of bigs a little bit more. But overall, just the wings, like they need somebody, you know, who can be more reliable than Dante DiVincenzo and Pat Connaughton and Sterling Brown and even Wesley Matthews. I think they need some more reliability than those guys gave last year. Any or all of those guys could be better. They could be more reliable, but they weren't. Like we saw it, and that was a problem. So I mean, there's plenty of spots. I think they also need, like, I don't know, a lot of teams have like the agitator, like the goon, like, you know, or however you want to call them, like, you know, the
Pat Bev.
Yeah, Pat Bev, like just somebody who's like kind of an in your face, like kind of like disturber. You know, not necessarily at the level of like the Morris twins, like that. Don't get like ahead of yourselves. Like, granted, like, either one of those guys would probably help a little bit. But I don't think that's what we're going for. Like, you know, kind of like someone in the Marcus Smart realm, where they're just going to annoy you and annoy you and annoy you, but they're also going to like be well liked and respected and supported by their teammates, or guys just that are going to bring a certain level of toughness. Which, I mean, you look at the Heat in that Heat series, the Heat were definitely a lot tougher. You know, there's just across the board, you know, Jimmy Butler, Bam Adebayo, Jay Crowder, you know, those guys were bringing it. And so I feel like the Bucks, I don't want to call them soft, but they weren't as tough as the Heat in a lot of situations. And so, like, you need that. You need kind of that chip on your shoulder, that edge, that competitiveness. And so maybe, and I've thought this for years. I've said this about the Bucks for a few years now. Like, you need just that person who's going to, you know, ruffle some feathers and battle inside and kind of just be more physical. Giannis obviously does all those things. But you need someone who's not Giannis to be doing more of the dirty work. You need Giannis to be doing Giannis things, not necessarily dirty work, toughness work, whatever. Yeah, so I'm rambling now, but there's definitely a lot of things for the Bucks to fix.
Saw some swirlings that Bogdanović would be somebody that the Bucks could potentially pursue, maybe as a sign and trade option from the Kings. That would be a sort of a shooter, you know, shooting guard wing type, I guess, that the Bucks could go after. You know, you're sort of alluding to it, sort of the subtext to what you're saying is trying to build a hierarchy of the things that the Bucks are really good at that they'd be willing to sacrifice in an effort to just get better on offense or have more star power, more clout in a postseason scenario. And I guess I wonder what your thought would be about what some of the things are that the Bucks would be most willing to sacrifice. You talked about Brook Lopez, for example. Rim protection is such a huge strength for this Bucks team because they had Brook Lopez just kind of swatting everything away. Eric Bledsoe, you mentioned it, great defensive point guard. Now, I do think if they can find someone to replace Eric Bledsoe, they would do that. I do think they would sacrifice that perimeter defense for somebody who can shoot, you know, who can score from more places on the floor. But I don't know exactly if they would be willing to degrade their defense to the point that it's, I mean, certainly not to the point where it's like all small people like the Rockets, but I'm sure there's a middle ground. Are there areas you think the Bucks really would not, you know, sort of equivocate on, like, this is part of our identity. We are not going to tear this down, this part of our team down. Or is it more like, you know what, the Bucks have one generational talent, and sure, they've got other guys. They've got Chris Middleton, you know, Bledsoe, Lopez, whatever. But none of that matters. It's Giannis and whatever we can come up with in this offseason, because he is the only thing we have that separates us from other teams. How do you think the Bucks would look at it?
Well, when it comes to things that they won't change, I feel like pace is one of them. I think no matter what roster they have or what the roster looks like next year, they're going to want to play fast, because that maximizes like Giannis's skills the most. When you can get out in transition, when you can play fast, when you can kind of be the aggressor, like, you're just going to be better when you have Giannis on your team and just the way they play. So playing fast, and like, that's something that, like, you know, Eric Bledsoe, you know, was good at. Like, when he's on the court, like, he plays at a different speed, you know, than a lot of other guys, just because he can get up to a different speed than a lot of other guys. I know that a lot of opponents have said that, like, the difference between Bledsoe being out there and not being out there, like, you can tell. But I think there are other guys who can do that. And the ability to, you know, play five out on offense, their offense hasn't been, you know, a huge problem in the regular season. It's mostly the playoffs. And so, like, what are the things that they're doing offensively that become problematic? Well, it's they're not shooting well. They're not having enough guys who can, knock down shots consistently. Guys who can create shots for themselves. That's a really big one. That's something that Giannis included is going to have to work on. Where, you know, if it wasn't getting to the rim, Giannis wasn't creating anything for himself that you would feel good about. You know, even after all the progress he made over the course of the season, in terms of shooting his threes or shooting in, in the mid range, all those different places, you still, like, in a playoff series, need to be able to find those spots, and he just still didn't have them. And so I feel like Middleton could create his own shot, you know, and hop on the tough shot express. And if he's on, it's great. If he's not on, well, then, you know, that's kind of an issue. But other than that, like, you're not finding a lot of shot creators. I mean, Brook Lopez in the post a little bit, but they're not going to post up all that much. So shot creation, you know, and self shot creation, I think, are really important, especially, you know, outside of the paint. Because we know that teams playing the Bucks, especially, you know, while Giannis is still in Milwaukee, they're going to crowd the paint and they're going to live with everything else. And if you can't create those shots in those other places, then that's an issue. So in terms of defense, I think they're going to have to be willing to sacrifice some of, like, their comfortability. Like, you know, Bud likes to do what he does. And it's like, okay, this is what we do. It works. We'll just do it all the time. And we have two postseasons worth of evidence, and more if you go back to the Hawks. But if we just look at the Bucks, there's two postseasons of evidence where, you know, doing, you know, for the most part, the same thing doesn't work. And then, you know, after a whole season of drop coverage and the drop scheme that they have, and playing that predominantly, for the course of the regular season, like, they just don't have that, like, that changeup, that second option. I feel like on offense they worked on adding in, like I mentioned, the Brook Lopez post ups. Like, they added a few new wrinkles this year, like Chris Middleton shooting more in the mid range, kind of doing a few different things, having the ball in his hand a little bit more. Brook Lopez going to work on the block. I mean, those are the ones that really stand out. But, like, you have those different things that you're doing. Defensively, I don't think that they added those same wrinkles. And maybe I'm just not remembering because it was so long ago. If you think back to the regular season, but, like, the defense pretty much was what it was, like, the previous year. It was for the most part the same. And there were a couple games they threw in zone. But it just was mostly static. And yes, it worked. It was insanely efficient. And I don't think that should be glossed over. Like, it was an insanely efficient defense and successful defense. But now we have two postseasons worth of evidence that predominantly playing that defense in a 7-game series, where teams are, they know exactly what's coming. Like, you're not keeping them on their toes. And then when you aren't used to playing a different coverage, suddenly you are kind of on your heels because you're trying to do something that you don't normally do. So I think there's got to be some sacrifices, some change on that end. Like, yes, for as much as you can, like, coast and, like, do things in the regular season and, like, do them successfully, that's great. But you need to be able to fall back on something different. And the Bucks haven't had that. I think they need to find a way to have that. Like, maybe some of the games against, like, lesser teams, or maybe even against good teams, you just mix it. You just play a different coverage the whole game. Like, you do something different than you normally do. Like, don't be predictable. And I'm sure, you know, Bud, you know, in the past would argue against that and be, hey, like, you need to know who you are, what your identity is, all that stuff. But, you know, the playoffs are a different animal, and we've seen that, you know, two, if not more, years.
And that plays into the questions around Mike Budenholzer in general, because he's obviously had a ton of regular season success that has not translated in the playoffs. So I know you're going to get there's still an aspect, segment of the fan base that would like to see the Bucks go in a different direction. I'm going to save that for another future podcast, I suppose. Taking inventory of the assets that the Bucks have, if they make any sort of trades, it seems to me that if they're going to make a splash, it almost bare minimum has to include Eric Bledsoe. And they have this draft pick, like we said. Ersan Ilyasova's contract might be an attractive piece to tie to that draft pick in any sort of trade. But, I mean, to really get something back, I really think it just comes down, it's Middleton or Bledsoe. And the question is whether or not Eric Bledsoe is the type of commodity that other teams would want to have. A guy who, like we've talked about, is limited in shooting, can drive, can space, can run the offense, can play defense, can do a lot of things well. But right now they're looking for something else. So I guess maybe the best question to ask here is, do you think there's any way Eric Bledsoe is back next year as the Bucks point guard, either because he was one of the assets that they had to trade, or because they simply felt like they had to go in another direction at all costs, or maybe because he's just not going to be that in demand? Maybe the Bucks just decide he's more valuable to us than he is to another team.
I have a hard time envisioning a situation where he's still with the Bucks. I mean, and that's not reporting anything. That's just my gut feel, because if they get rid of Middleton, who are they bringing back? Like, who are they getting? Like, and who is going to be better than him that they can bring back? You know, if this is like a DeMar DeRozan, Kawhi Leonard type situation where you can, you know, get, you can send off, if you're the Raptors, you can send off DeMar DeRozan, a guy who's been with the organization for a long time, who's well liked, who's done everything right, who's progressed like a lot within the team and had built himself into something really, really great. And you can trade him for Kawhi Leonard. Like, okay, like, that's one thing. But if you're trading Middleton for anybody who is, you know, equal or lesser, or two guys who are, you know, maybe, you know, lesser or similar. I don't know. I just don't know what you would need to get back in order to validate a trade like that. Like, if you can send him out and get, I'm just trying to think, like, we mentioned Damian Lillard before. Let's just use him for the sake of argument. If you can send out Chris Middleton, get Damian Lillard, you do it, right? But that's not a world that I think is grounded in reality. Like, there aren't too many guys who are all NBA caliber players who, you know, the Bucks are going to actually, like, be able to get back. And maybe I'm wrong. Like, maybe they can send out Chris Middleton and get back an all NBA caliber player who is still in their prime. Like, that, you know, I don't know what else you have to, you know, attach to that trade, but maybe it's possible. But I just don't see as many possibilities where, okay, you bring back that other person, but you still have Eric Bledsoe. The problem that they have still exists, right? Like, unless they're bringing back a point guard, but then in that situation, why do you need Eric Bledsoe? So, like, sending out Middleton just doesn't, like, there's no situation where it makes sense, because either you bring back a wing or multiple wings who then leave you with the same problem that you had, or you bring back a point guard, and now you don't need Eric Bledsoe. So I'm just not seeing it. versus, you know, if you can find a way to retain Middleton, retain Giannis, obviously, like you have two guys who are perennial all-stars at this point, and are guys who have proven in the playoffs that they can, you know, play at a high level. Not necessarily saying that they've played at the highest level they've needed to play at, or they've been the best at all times, but in the playoffs, like those guys can win you games. And they have won the Bucks games in the playoffs, even when the rest of their teammates haven't necessarily played well. So they're definitely building blocks, guys. The Bucks can, you know, center themselves on. But Eric Bledsoe, like I said before, we have the 3 years of evidence. We have the Boston series 3 years ago. We have the Toronto series last year. We have the Heat series this year. I think there's just so much mounting evidence that you have to figure out a way to get a shooting point guard into that system. It's just not Bledsoe. Bledsoe was a guy who, at the time they got him, there was a lot of excitement, and rightfully so, because this is somebody who, like, you know, had some of the tools that maybe they could use to open things up for Giannis in terms of his passing and taking on the point guard duties and letting Giannis be off the ball. And there's just so many possibilities, so many, you know, thoughts of like what kind of like lob connections would there be. But that was also before Giannis like was really fully Giannis. And so like the, you know, things have changed, and Bledsoe has fit defensively, but he hasn't fit offensively in the consistent way that the Bucks might have envisioned. You know, who knew like then that the NBA would become the 3-point heavy, you know, volume shooting league that it is. Like, and that his detriment in that skill in particular would be such a major, like, you know, issue holding the Bucks back. Like, the times have changed, and like maybe this is an indication, and you could very reasonably argue it's an indication that the Bucks paid him too soon, that they extended him too soon when they did that in March of 2019. That maybe they could have not extended him and maybe brought back Brogdon, maybe brought in somebody else, and they didn't see that, you know, the potential pitfalls of that decision at the time. I think that's a valid criticism. Like, you know, at the time they locked him up for an amount of money that is reasonable compared to starting point guards in the NBA. I think it's about somewhere near the middle of starting point guard salaries in the NBA. So, like, you know, the contract in and of itself isn't a bad value. The problem is that the fit is not necessarily the best fit, the one that's going to help the Bucks get to where they need to go. And at that point, the Bucks were in the midst of their first great season in a really long time. And so maybe they had the blinders on a little bit. Like, maybe they thought, okay, we're getting value because we're going to sign him this summer, or we're going to sign him now. You know, if he continues to have a great postseason like he did during the regular season, his value is going to go through the roof. So we're actually saving money by bringing him back now. The problem is that kind of the opposite happened, where he didn't continue to have great success like he did in the regular season. His play dropped off in the postseason, and I have no idea what the market would have been for him last summer had he been a free agent. So, you know, hindsight's 20/20, but it seems like that was a miscalculation. And you know, granted, some people might argue that they thought it was miscalculation at the time, and that's fair. But it's starting to look clearer and clearer now that you know, was a miscalculation. Now, how do you make up for that? How do you bounce back? How do you roll with the punches? That's the big challenge ahead for John Horst and the Bucks front office and the Bucks ownership, and, you know, that whole group that they have, to figure out how do we get the right fit at point guard, the right fit, you know, just in the backcourt in general, to go around Giannis with the pieces that they have, because the pieces that they have aren't many. Like you mentioned before, like, they have that Indiana pick, that first round pick this year, and they have Ersan Ilyasova, who is non-guaranteed for next year. So if you can trade him before the start of the new league year, that team can just waive him and have no penalty, open up some cap space, so that is a, you know, a useful tool. It's not a great tool, but it's a useful tool. And then out of their young guys, like, who do they have that teams really want? I mean, Donovan DiVincenzo is probably the only one. I don't think DJ Wilson is necessarily, you know, jumping off the page at people who are like, ooh, I really want to get a hold of that guy. He's going to be awesome. Like, you know, he's had moments for the Bucks, but he mostly hasn't played. So, you know, what team is like, hey, $4.5 million for DJ Wilson, great, I'll take it, and then I'll have his bird rights and we'll be able to keep him into the future and he can start for us. Like, that's just, there's no evidence of that. So it's the cupboard is fairly bare for the Bucks, and you know, now they're gonna have to figure out how to cobble something together this offseason.
Yeah, I think you mentioned DiVincenzo. Previous Bucks teams, I would have had a lot of time to sort of let him develop. But I wonder if that's a luxury that they're not even thinking about right now. That if a team were be willing to make a move and DiVincenzo would be involved, I gotta think the Bucks would take it and say, you know what, we need to win now. We need to win it immediately. Convince our superstar to stay. Nothing is off the table. Before I let you go,
just like
sure.
You know, in that vein, that's what leads me to believe that like the Bucks aren't picking anybody in this draft.
Oh no, this draft pick is not going to be a Buck.
Yeah, that 24th overall pick. Like, that's like one of the few good things they have. Like, you know, you can't say like, oh, like we'll take that guy at 24 and we'll work him into the system, like, and he'll be good. It's like, no, like there's no time for that. Like, you need to use that 24th draft pick, you know, which honestly isn't even that great of a pick, right? It's, you know, the number of guys who have been picked at 24 or lower who pan out, you know, is pretty small. I mean, the guys who get drafted and pan out is also pretty small, right? Just in general, the draft is kind of a crapshoot. And so getting that person at 24 who's going to be able to jump in right away and help, you can't rely on that, especially since we don't know how long training camp will be, how long the season will be. You know, obviously that person probably hasn't played very much organized basketball since like maybe like March or February. Like, you just don't know what that's going to be. And the Bucks, like you said, aren't a team that has the time to try and figure that out. So, you know, Ersan plus that pick or Bledsoe in the pick, or there's a whole bunch of options there that I think the Bucks are exploring and need to explore and need to nail down, because, you know, that's just not a pick that's very useful. I know that there's somebody who emailed me and people have tweeted me before, like, oh, what do you think the Bucks are doing in the draft? Like, who can they pick? Who should they be looking at? It's like, no one. Like, look around the league. That's what they should be looking at. Like, teams that need a point guard, teams that maybe need to, you know, open up a little bit more cap space. You know, teams that have guys on expiring deals or underused guys. Like, we haven't even mentioned, like, you know, Victor Oladipo could be somebody who the Bucks might be interested in. And there are positives and negatives of that. You know, he's going into his last year at the Pacers, and I know that he has said that he wants a max deal after next year, and he wants to get paid and all this stuff. But he's also like been, you know, injury riddled and hasn't played all that much, and he's had his own issues. But, you know, in the right deal, like, could they take a flyer on him? Maybe. Could he run the point? Sure. Is he a point guard? Not exactly, but you could kind of put him there. Kind of the same argument I made with Bradley Beal. Like, if you could just put him and Chris Middleton and Yas Adetokunbo, like, together on the court, like, things can happen. And so, like, maybe he's somebody that they might be interested in, you know, maybe kick the tires and say, hey, Pacers, you can have your pick back. And, you know, but the problem is in that situation is you can't really offer them Bledsoe, because I don't think they're going to look at the Bucks and go, oh, you know what, we just want a Bledsoe and Brogdon backcourt, just like you guys. So I don't know if that would be the fit or how that trade would actually come together or who they'd be interested in. You know, obviously they just hired a new coach and who knows what direction that will lead them toward and what their identity is going to be. But the Bucks need to be looking around the league. They don't need to be looking at the draft. And sure, like, yes, they'll do their due diligence. They'll look at the draft. They'll figure out who's available. Maybe they'll figure out a way to get a second round pick that will come at a lower price point and maybe give them somebody who they can start in the pipeline and start growing and building around or building up. But that's kind of the area you're looking for. Those are like low value or lower value, you know, low risk type propositions. With a first round pick, you need to make the most of that. You need to maximize that pick for sure. And picking someone, I don't think necessarily does that unless you're able to, you know, look at your crystal ball and figure out that you're picking the person who's going to end up being like the biggest steal in the past decade or something like that. So it's just really hard. But in addition to looking for trades, like, they got to figure out too, who are some of the guys on the fringes? Who are some of the guys who, you know, can fill out the roster? Because they're already basically capped out. If you just look at their the eight guys the Bucks have on guaranteed contracts, plus like the money they still owe John Luehr and Larry Sanders, like 30 to 114 million. Like, and last year the salary cap was like, you know, what was it last year? It was like 109. And this year before the pandemic, it was projected for this year to be like around like 115, 116. So they're capped out with eight guys plus dead money. And that's not even counting like if Robin Lopez and Wesley Matthews, who have player options, if they pick up their options and they come back. And that's not counting the fact that, like, you know, that's not resolving Sterling Brown or Pat Connaughton or Kyle Korver, who are all free agents. So, like, you have, like, basically no wiggle room. So the only thing you can do is use the mid-level exception, which if the Bucks use the full mid, they'll be hard-capped at the apron, which is, like, a little bit over the tax line. It's, like, $5-7 million over the luxury tax line, and you cannot, for any reason, exceed that. Or that they're going to have to, and they use their biannual exception, which I believe they have this year because they got Brook Lopez on it 2 years ago, that would also hard cap them. Or they just sign guys to minimum contracts. So, like, who are these people that you can fit in who are going to provide you value and depth to get through the regular season while also still having a strong enough core of, like, eight or nine guys who can serve as your playoff rotation and get you where you want to go?
Yeah, I was going to ask about some of those exceptions real quickly before I let you go. The free agency, we talked about these trades, these maneuvers, and I think we can all agree that's how the Bucks are going to build, you know, get better, is through some of those mechanisms. As far as free agency goes, you know, like you said, using those exceptions hard caps them at a time when they probably don't want to be hard capped, because they've said they're willing to go in the luxury tax with a lower salary cap. They're going to need to do that. So those things are very, very dicey to use. You mentioned Joe Harris a while ago. He would be a great fit, except the Nets are going to be really good. I have to think Joe Harris is going to want to go back to a team that has Kyrie Irving and Kevin Durant coming back healthy and will be a significant player for the Eastern Conference. Part of the problem why the Bucks are in such dire straits is that this Eastern Conference is getting quite a bit better. So anybody out there in free agency, or do you just really, would you just say, look, don't expect the Bucks to get better through those means?
I mean, it's going to be really tough. I mean, you know, this isn't a build on the fringes, build with, like, you know, you can't, like, rely on the mid-level and the biannual and, like, minimum contracts to get the Bucks where they need to go. They need to do more than that. They've tried that, right? Like, they did that, like, last year. Yes, they did a couple trades. But they're mostly trades to shed salary so they could re-sign their own guys. Like that's not the path, I don't think. I mean, I don't think that's the path to, you know, meaningful, impactful change when it comes to this roster. You need to go big. This is the time. The Bucks decided last year was not the time to go big when they just brought back their guys, got rid of Brogdon, and, you know, improved on the fringes. They thought, okay, we got to the Eastern Conference Finals. Let's just, like, everybody gets better. Everybody improves. We improve on the fringes. We build this, like, solid team, and then we win. Well, like, maybe that would have worked if it wasn't a, you know, pandemic-affected season. Maybe it would have never worked. We don't know. We can't hop in a time machine or some alternate reality, but we do know that it didn't work. And so, you know, the big thing now is that, like, you've run out of time. Like, if you don't go big now, when are you going to go big? Like, maybe they missed their window. Like, as sad of a thing as it might be for Bucks fans to hear, maybe that window was this past year. Maybe this was the chance. Maybe this was the chance where if they had gone big last year, gone into the text last year, either by bringing back Brogdon or doing something else, that would have been the perfect situation where they could have, you know, succeeded both in the regular season and in the playoffs, especially when you don't have to, you know, stare down the rise of, or the prospective rise of the Nets with Kyrie Irving and Kevin Durant, where they could have been, you know, healthy for 4 months between the, you know, March 11th and the start of the bubble, and had an opportunity to, you know, take their team as healthy as possible and go out and win. But so they kicked the can down the road, and, you know, for all the reasonable reasons that they had for doing that at the time, you know, it didn't work. And so now this is the time to go big. This is the time to not just, like, relax and say, okay, we're just going to, like, improve on the fringes. They need to make as many big swings as they can. So I think it's going to come down to some trades. Like, there are some, like, nice free agents that you can get at the mid-level or on minimum contracts, guys who could be, you know, solid parts of your bench, or maybe even like, you know, a fifth starter or something like that. But you need to go think bigger than that and think grander than that. Like if your aspirations are for the absolute, like, you know, peak of achievement, you need to make moves that are in line with that. And so, you know, free agency, they're pretty strapped in terms of getting those guys as a direct signing, because they're already basically over the cap, if not definitely over the cap. So you have to figure out ways to trade and find partners and find, you know, different creative ways to maybe do multi-team trade or kind of mix things up. You might have to mortgage the future, where, you know, you send future picks or pick swaps in order to give yourself a chance to win. Because if you don't have Giannis for the next 4 or 5 years, you're probably not winning anyway. So like you need to be able to give yourself the greatest chance of keeping him, and the greatest chance of keeping him is proving that you can win, or at least convincing him that he can win in Milwaukee now and for the future.
And here we thought there'd be nothing to discuss when we still don't know the timeline of the NBA offseason, but there is still plenty, as the Bucks, I think rightfully, there's some consternation here. The Bucks' path forward is not obvious. There are a lot of moving pieces, a lot of things to unravel. And Matt Velasquez, Milwaukee Journal Sentinel beat reporter, covering the Milwaukee Bucks, does his best here on the podcast. Thanks for joining us, Matt. We will we'll have to touch base again as we get closer to whatever comes next. I don't know, you know, when the free agency thing starts or the draft. I don't know. We'll talk again soon.
Yeah, once we figure out some like actual like solid information, like it'd be a great time to like come back and figure out some ideas. But until then, like, I don't know, what are we even doing? Like we don't know what's happening.
Yeah, we're all guesstimating like everybody else. A lot of think pieces out there about Giannis. Obviously, a lot of discussion about how this Bucks team is going to get better whenever the season gets underway. Thanks for listening to the Milwaukee Bucks Journal Sentinel podcast. My name again is J.R. Radcliffe. Find us on Stitcher, Spotify, or Apple Podcasts, of course. Rating and reviews, always appreciated. You can find me or Matt on Twitter. I'm at J.R. Radcliffe. He's at Matt_Velasquez. Thanks for tuning in. We'll catch you again very soon.